the Police Fraternal Organization, and Mr. Paul Taylor, the co-founder of RVA League for Safer Streets, who is an at-large member. Ms. Hyman, will you read a list of attendees? I'm sorry, will you take the roll?
Chief Williams?
Yes.
Ms. Biggs?
Yes.
Chief Branch?
Here.
Ms. Carrera? Ms. Chapman?
Here I am.
Ms. Chapman? Sorry, I thought I heard her. Sheriff Crawford?
I'm here.
Judge Dennehy? Mayor Dole?
Here.
Officer Evans?
Here.
Ms. Horn? Mr. Hu Young? Mr. Johnson?
Here.
Mr. Katyal?
Present.
Mr. Macon?
Here.
Judge Malvo? Ms. Pearson? Ms. Peterson? Ms. Peterson? Okay, I see someone talking, but you're on mute. Okay. Mr. Porter? Mr. Porter? Okay. Sheriff Roper? Colonel Settle?
Here.
Ms. Smith?
Here.
Superintendent Smith?
Here.
Mr. Taylor? Mr. Taylor? Mr. Walters?
Lisa Hernandez for Joe Walters.
Chief Wright?
Here.
Senator Morrissey?
Matt Wheeler for Joe Morrissey.
Senator McClellan? Delegate Delaney?
Here.
Delegate Jones? We have a quorum.
Ms. Hyman, did you hear? I had my sound off. You heard me, Angie Carrera?
Oh, I did not. I've got you now. Thank you.
Okay.
Did we miss anybody else? Okay.
I see Paul Taylor there. Is that who you were trying to get?
Yeah, he's answering, so I'm not sure what that's about, but I will.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm here. My Wi-Fi kind of is everywhere.
Okay.
Right now, so thank you. Yes, I'm here.
All right, great. Part of the issues with doing these meetings on Zoom. Thank everybody for attending. Thanks to the proxies for attending as well. Everyone should have gotten the minutes to the May 21, 2020 meeting. Are there any corrections, additions, or deletions need to be made? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Second. Mary Biggs.
All right, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, great. Next up is the direction report, Director Shannon Dion.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chief Williams. It's so good to see everyone and hope everyone is well. I just want to give a shout out to our newest members, Officer Benny Evans from Alexandria Police Department. He is an amazing officer and he's done so much work in his community. He's also a crisis intervention trainer, and I look forward to getting to know Officer Evans more and working with him on this board. Also want to give a shout out to Paul Taylor, who our agency has been working closely with for the better part of 2020 and even beyond that. He's with the RVA League for Safer Streets and is a just a wealth of information and expertise for us, and keeps us grounded, keeps us focused, and reminds us of why the agency is where we are and the work that we do. So thank you so much to both of you for accepting the appointment from Governor Northam, and we look forward to working with you. I just have a few updates for you this morning. I'm sure many of you probably have.
Thank you, Sharon.
I'm sure many of you have a little bit of Zoom fatigue after however many months of the pandemic. So I'll keep it short. First, we are pleased to share with you that DCJS has been awarded more than $3.5 million in the last month. This is competitive federal funding that has been awarded to us to help vulnerable youth in Virginia. So we received two grants from the Department of Justice. We received a $1.8 million from the Bureau of Justice Administration, and it's called the Stop School Violence Program. It stands for Student, Teachers, and Officers Preventing School Violence Program. And this grant is going to fund a three-year project that DCJS is calling Virginia CARES, and the CARES stands for Caring, Awareness, Recognition, Engagement, and Support. And through this program, we are going to be increasing mental health awareness throughout Virginia schools by helping to build positive school climates. We're gonna make folks more aware of the resources that are available. We're gonna help them identify and recognize at-risk behaviors and help them engage the community. The project will also consist of a public service announcement that's gonna be a sort of a youth-to-youth led campaign about suicide prevention. And we estimate that we're gonna get over 5 million social media hits. And the third component of this new grant is implementing what's called the Handle with Care and Pathways for Prevention of School Violence program. And that's a really neat program where we're gonna help law enforcement officers who respond to calls for service, and they see that there's a school-aged child there who has witnessed a traumatic event, and they will let the schools know that, hey, you know, when these kids come back to school, you should handle them with care and be a little bit more extra, you know, sensitive and sort of give them a trauma-informed response. So we're very excited about that grant, as well as a $1.6 million grant that we received from the Office of Justice Programs Services for Minor Victims of Sex Trafficking Program. And with that grant, we are going to expand and strengthen services that are available to the minor victims of sex trafficking. And that's gonna include comprehensive wraparound case management services. It's gonna involve trauma-informed mental health services, substance abuse counseling, legal services, residential treatment options, and a non-traditional host home program. Because what we're finding and seeing throughout the state is that minor victims of sex trafficking it's hard to find a suitable place for them to live and receive care until they are reunited or go back to a more permanent home situation. But we're very excited to get these grants. These were competitive grants. I think the sex trafficking one, we were one of four states in the country to receive it. So I'm very proud of our team who worked very, very hard to apply and getting our partners on board with us to get these grants. The other item of interest I just wanted to highlight for you is that DCJS is both co-hosting and participating in an endeavor called Underserved Populations Learning Collaborative. We call it UPLC for short. And the focus of this particular learning collaborative is to enhance Virginia's sexual and domestic violence programming. It's a 24-month collaborative, and the goal is to basically support local sexual and domestic violence agencies to become stronger allies for underserved populations and to promote access to culturally responsive and comprehensive services. And while Virginia has a very, very strong network of advocacy agencies, we know that there are still many survivors who are not being served and others for whom services don't really quite match up to their needs. And so this project is aiming to expand that circle and close the gaps and provide those resources and better prepare agencies who provide those services to make sure that we're reaching everyone who needs support. This collaborative started a couple months ago with support from the Department of Social Services and the Action Alliance. So we're really pleased that we are participating in that. And just a couple more things. The agency continues to adapt well to working in a pandemic. We're still mostly teleworking. In September, we implemented policies and procedures that meet state regulations that allow staff members who want to and are comfortable with returning to the office on a more frequent basis. It's still not a Monday through Friday kind of situation. And honestly, most people, I think, are very, very productive at home. And so we have not seen a huge transition of folks coming back into the office at this time. But I am very proud of everyone at DCJS for working very hard. The transition, I know I've mentioned this before, the transition when all this happened in February and March was quite seamless, and we are still able to provide services and supports to the criminal justice system and our customers. So I do want to give a shout out to everyone at DCJS for that. And finally, I just want to mention that we have an employee, a member of our family who is retiring. Bill Dodd is a DCJS veteran. He's retiring this week, almost to the day, 30 years at DCJS, 30 years in state government. And he started with the grants team and is finishing strong in the grants team. And every single grant that has come before you for your review and approval has Bill Dodd's fingerprints and calculations behind it. And we could not have been as successful without Bill's expertise and his commitment, his strong commitment and dedication to the agency. And so while we're very sad to see him go, we know that he's definitely earned his right to retire and go start a new chapter in life, focusing on his family, his grandkids, and traveling. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. And that actually concludes my report, Chief Williams.
All right. Thank you, Director Dion. Any questions or any comments for Director Dion? All right. Hearing none, thank you again for your report. Next is the Committee on Training. Chief Kelvin Wright, you got a report from COT.
Good morning, everyone. COT met this morning at 10 a.m. and received a briefing from DCJS with regard to the certification of, recertification of Virginia Beach as a certified crime prevention community, and that was approved by the board. And we also received just some information about DCJS with regard to T-Rex and other systems, and that's basically our meeting. Thank you.
So are you making a motion to approve the recertification of Virginia Beach?
Yes.
Chief Branch, I'll second that.
All right, any further discussion? Any recusals? All right, Ms. Hyman, do we need to do a roll call for this, or can we just do a...
I would be glad to do a roll call.
Okay, let's do that.
All right, Chief Williams?
Yes.
I'm sorry, who was that?
I don't know, Chief Williams is aye.
All right, Ms. Biggs?
Aye.
Chief Branch?
Aye.
Ms. Carrera?
Aye.
Ms. Chapman?
Aye.
Sheriff Crawford?
Aye.
Judge Denneke? Judge Denneke? Mayor Dole?
Aye.
Officer Evans?
Aye.
Ms. Horn? Mr. Huyong? Mr. Johnson?
Aye.
Mr. Katyal?
Aye.
Mr. Macon?
Aye.
Judge Malvo? Ms. Pearson?
Aye.
Ms. Peterson?
Lorene, Ms. Peterson, yes, is on the call. She's via phone, but she cannot be unmuted, so she will send us her vote in the chat room that we can capture.
Right, okay. Mr. Porter? Okay. Sheriff Roper? Colonel Settle?
Aye.
Ms. Smith?
Aye.
Superintendent Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Taylor? Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Chief Wright?
Aye.
The ayes have it.
Okay, great. Congratulations to the City of Virginia Beach being recertified as a certified crime prevention community. Did you complete your report, Chief Wright? I'm sorry.
Yes, that completes the report.
Okay, great. So next will be the Executive Committee. The executive committee met on Thursday, August 27, 2020. The executive committee voted to approve 172 awards totaling $6,054,850 for the coronavirus emergency supplemental funding, two awards totaling $353,144 for the residential substance abuse treatment funding, and one award totaling $75,000 for the Drive to Work program funding. The executive committee also approved the recommendation of the Nominations and Appointments Committee to fill five vacant seats on the Private Security Services Board, Advisory Board, as they are as follows. The Electronic Security Business Representative, Frank Comensberger. The Locksmith Business Representative, Christopher Mortensen. The Personal Protection Specialist Representative, Michael Niner. And the Special Conservative Peace Representative, Charles Law. And that concludes the report of the executive committee meeting. Next, we'll move on to the grants committee. The grants committee met on Thursday, October 1st, 2020. The committee received overviews and evaluations from staff and recommends approval of the following grants. 24 awards totaling $525,306 in sexual assault services program funding. Those are the grant awards that require a vote from the full board. I will now entertain a motion to approve the grants as recommended by the grants committee.
Second, Dave Johnson.
I'm sorry, who made the motion?
Mary did.
Okay.
And Mr. Johnson seconded it. Is there any further discussion? All right, Ms. Hyman, will you please call the roll for any recusals? The grants have been numbered sequentially to make it easy to record your recusals. When called upon, please state your name and the number assigned to any grant that you are recusing from.
Okay, Chief Williams?
None.
Ms. Biggs?
None.
Chief Branch? Chief Branch, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. I would need to recuse myself from grant item, line item 20, Rappahannock Council against sexual assault. And that's it.
Okay. Ms. Carrera?
None.
Ms. Chapman?
I didn't have an opportunity to review the grants, but if there's anything for the parole board, I'll recuse myself from those.
Okay, Sheriff Crawford?
None.
Judge Denneke?
12 and 20.
12 and 20?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Mayor Dole?
17.
That's it?
Yes.
Okay. Officer Evans?
None.
None?
None.
Mr. Hu Young, are you in? Mr. Johnson?
None.
Mr. Katyal?
None.
Mr. Macon?
No recusals.
Judge Malvo?
None.
Ms. Pearson?
None.
Ms. Peterson? None. Okay. Mr. Porter? Okay. Sheriff Roper? Nope. Colonel Settle?
None.
Ms. Smith?
None.
Superintendent Smith?
None.
Mr. Taylor? Ms. Hernandez?
None.
Chief Wright?
None.
Okay.
Okay, with those recusals, all those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Likewise? All right, the motion passes. Congratulations to all the grant recipients. The Grants Committee also received a request from the Town of Vienna regarding the Justice Assistant Grant, or the JAG Grant, number 20-A4922-AD16.
I had to type this over.
No, she didn't know that they had changed his middle name, Dwayne.
This JAG award supports the Northern Virginia Gang Task Force. As a result of the resignation of Vienna's financial officer, the town is no longer able to effectively manage the award. The Grants Committee recommends approval to transfer the Justice Assistant Grant from the Town of Vienna to the County of Fairfax, which has agreed to assume the grant responsibilities going forward. I'll now entertain a motion to approve the transfer as recommended by the Grants Committee.
So moved, Mary Biggs.
Second, Chief Branch.
All right, is there any further discussion? Ms. Hyman, would you call the roll for any recusals?
Yes, Chief Williams.
No.
Ms. Biggs?
None.
Chief Branch?
No.
Ms. Carrera?
None.
Ms. Chapman? Ms. Chapman?
None.
Sheriff Crawford?
None.
Judge Denneke? Mayor Dole?
None.
Officer Evans?
None.
Mr. Johnson?
None.
Mr. Katyal?
None.
Mr. Macon?
None.
Judge Malveaux?
None.
Ms. Pearson?
None.
Ms. Peterson? Mr. Porter? Sheriff Roper? Sorry, he's not here. Colonel Settle?
I recuse. Virginia State Police is an active member of the Northern Virginia Gang Task Force.
Okay, Ms. Smith?
None.
Superintendent Smith?
None.
Mr. Taylor?
None.
Ms. Hernandez?
None.
Chief Wright?
None.
Okay.
All right, with those recusals, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All right, any opposed? Likewise. All right, the motion passes. Congratulations to Fairfax County, and thanks to them for taking that that grant over. A lot of work, as always, goes into these grants. Like to say thank you to Albert Stokes and his whole crew. The executive committee approved a lot of the coronavirus, or all the coronavirus relief grants. And there's a lot of work done, and appreciate all that he and his staff does. And they're always very thorough, and everything's well done. So thanks to you all, the staff. That concludes the grant portion of the agenda. We'll move into old business. There is a update on decertification. Eric Smith, the manager for standards and policy at the Law Enforcement Division, DCGS, will give us an update on the decertification appeal from Kevin Santiago. Eric?
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As Chief noted, I'm here to provide a brief recap and an update on the decertification proceedings for Kevin Santiago, who was an officer with the Richmond Police Department. In the read-ahead material, you should have all the information that was provided for the original hearing back in 2018. On May 23rd, 2018, Mr. Santiago entered a no-contest plea to a charge of domestic assault in violation of 18.2-57.2. The court found that the facts were sufficient for a finding of guilt, but deferred the matter until June 2nd of 2020, allowing him to be placed on probation and to have the opportunity to have the charge dismissed. He was decertified pursuant to Virginia Code Section 15.2-1707A Romanet 4 on September 13th, 2018. He appealed the decertification and a hearing was heard before the full board on December 6th, 2018. Mr. Santiago, by counsel at the time, offered his side of the events and argued to remain eligible for certification. He noted that he was unrepresented at the time of his plea and was unaware of the collateral consequences, that being the decertification. The victim in the case was also present at that hearing and offered evidence on his behalf related to the circumstances that led to him being charged. After a great deal of discussion, the board voted to defer any action until there was a final disposition of the charge. However, there was a request for more information from the Richmond Police Department. So at the next meeting on May 9th, 2019, the board heard from Detective Demery of the Richmond Police Department, who provided some additional information regarding his investigation into the case. Provided a little bit of the details of the facts that he ascertained based on speaking with both the victim and the defendant at the scene. On August 5th, 2020, the charge was dismissed in Richmond Juvenile Domestic Relation Court. It was obviously originally scheduled for June 2nd. It was continued a couple times for due to COVID-related concerns. However, it was ultimately dismissed. Mr. Santiago is no longer employed with the Richmond Police Department, and our attempts to reach him have been unsuccessful. As I noted, he was represented by counsel at the original hearing back in 2018. However, I've spoken with his attorney at the time, who indicates he no longer represents Mr. Santiago and does not have up-to-date contact information for him. He did relay to me that the address that we had on file for Mr. Santiago was no longer a valid address for him. So our efforts to reach Mr. Santiago have been unsuccessful so far. So that's just a brief update. I'm happy to answer any questions about any specifics anybody has. If there's anything, any other recollection, refreshment anybody needs based on the prior proceedings, again, a lot of that information's in your read-ahead, so if you've read it, I don't want to rehash it all in the interests of time, but am certainly available to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Smith?
This is Judge Denneke. I have one question.
Yes, ma'am.
His plea at the original hearing was no contest or nolo contendere. Was that plea ever changed?
I don't believe so. I believe it was always a no contest plea.
All right. And so under the regulations, he should be decertified under the current regulations, correct?
Under 15.2.1707, a plea of no contest is sufficient to trigger decertification. Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you.
Eric, this is Shannon Dion. I have a question. I know I'm not a voting member of this board, but am I recalling correctly that when they presented evidence to the board that there was testimony that unrelated to the criminal charge against him, that the officer at the time had inappropriately accessed VSIN information while in his capacity as an officer?
There was. He was actually convicted for computer trespass prior to this incident. However, a computer trespass charge is not a charge that he would be eligible for decertification for.
And am I remembering correctly that that was related to his family and domestic situation that he was looking up information about?
Yes, ma'am, I believe so.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Mr. Smith? All right, on December 6, 2018, the board deferred action on Mr. Santiago's appeal. The board may now either sustain the decertification or vote to reinstate Mr. Santiago's certification. What's your pleasure? Do we have a motion regarding the action to be taken on the appeal?
Mr. Chairman, Chief Branch, I move that we sustain the decertification as presented by DCJS.
Second by Chief Wright.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Anyone want to recuse themselves from this?
Yes. Mary Malva, I recuse myself from this matter.
Do we need to call roll on this?
Yes, I'm sorry. Okay. Please.
All right. I'm Chief Williams?
No.
Ms. Biggs?
Yes.
Chief Branch?
No.
Ms. Carrera?
No.
Ms. Chapman?
No.
Sheriff Crawford? Sheriff Crawford? Judge Denneke?
I want to make sure I understand the motion. The motion is to sustain the decertification, correct?
That's the motion, but what we're voting on right now is whether or not to recuse ourselves.
Oh, no. No recusal.
Okay, Mayor Dole?
No.
Officer Evans?
No.
Mr. Johnson?
No.
Mr. Katyal?
No.
Mr. Macon?
No.
Judge Malvo?
I recuse.
Ms. Pearson?
No recusal.
Ms. Peterson? Mr. Porter?
Ms. Peterson indicated no recusal in the chat room.
Hold on a minute.
Settle?
No.
Ms. Smith?
No.
Superintendent Smith?
No.
Mr. Taylor?
None.
Ms. Hernandez?
No.
Chief Wright?
No.
Okay, so I still need Sheriff Crawford. Are you back on?
Yes.
You want to recuse yourself?
No recusals.
Okay.
This is Mary Biggs. I do not want to recuse myself. I said yes, but I do not want to recuse myself.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, not trying to make this confusing, but so we have a motion and properly seconded to sustain the decertification of Mr. Santiago. Now, Ms. Hyman, would you go ahead and can we do a roll call vote for that? Again, the motion is to sustain the decertification of Mr. Santiago.
Okay, Chief Williams.
Aye.
Ms. Biggs.
Aye.
Chief Branch.
Aye.
Ms. Carrera.
Aye.
Ms. Chapman.
Aye.
Sheriff Crawford.
Yes.
Judge Denneke.
Aye.
Mayor Dole.
Aye.
Officer Evans.
Aye.
Mr. Johnson.
Aye.
Mr. Katyal.
Aye.
Mr. Macon.
Aye.
Judge Malvo. Judge Malvo.
You recuse yourself.
Okay.
I recuse myself.
Ms. Pearson.
Aye.
Ms. Peterson.
She's an
aye. Porter. Yeah, Mr. Porter. Colonel Settle.
Aye.
Ms. Smith.
Aye.
Superintendent Smith.
Aye.
Mr. Taylor.
Due to not having a firm understanding of this, I would abstain.
Okay. Ms. Hernandez.
Aye.
Chief Wright.
Aye.
Okay.
All right. So the motion carries. Thanks for indulging me with that, Ms. Hyman.
Sure.
We'll move on to new business. David Cotter, the Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs at DCJS, has a legislative update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are thankfully nearing the end of the special session that was called for addressing the budget for COVID and addressing police and public safety reforms. What I will be going through right now are the bills directly affecting law enforcement and public safety and this board specifically, with a couple caveats. The first being, these are going to be based on what the most recent conference reports are. A lot of these conference reports have actually passed both bodies and are on their way to the governor. However, the governor still always has the option to send down amendments, so these things may or may not be in their final form right now. So that's just one thing to keep in mind when I'm going through these things, which is they are possibly subject to change. Also, I know Delegate Delaney is at least on this conference call meeting thing, so I will always defer to a member of the General Assembly if they want to chime in on any of these things. The other thing to keep in mind is the Senate did generally an omnibus bill. So Senate Bill 5030, which was patroned by Senator Locke, has a lot of stuff in that bill where the House did them by individual bills. A lot of times I'll be referring to Senate Bill 5030 when I'm referring to lots of various House bill numbers, and that's just because the Senate did that omnibus thing. So the first thing that really directly affects the board is House Bill 5108, patroned by Delegate Guzman, and Senate Bill 5030 by Senator Locke, which is going to increase the membership of the Criminal Justice Services Board by 3 members. So it's going to go from 29 to 32. It adds a representative of a social justice organization, a mental health service provider, and it adds an additional representative of community interest, and specifically requires that representative represent one of 4 minority groups that are listed in the code. So those are the 3 new people that are added to the CJSB. In addition, 4 people are added to the Committee on Training. It's those same 3 individuals who got added to the CJSB, as well as Dave Johnson, an attorney representing the Indigent Defense Commission. So essentially Dave. The next bill that really directly affects the business of the board is House Bill 5051 by Delegate Simon, and again, Senator Locke's Senate Bill 5030, which deals with decertification. And so that bill tasks the CJSB to adopt statewide professional standards of conduct that will be applicable to all law enforcement and jail officers. And there's a work group provision in those bills about who has to be assembled to help develop those professional standards. And in addition, once those standards develop, the bills impose new grounds for decertification, because currently the grounds for decertification are conviction or plead no contest to felonies, various misdemeanors, failing drug tests, not completing training, and now they're going to add in decertification grounds for somebody who is terminated or resigns for a violation of state or federal law, for engaging in serious misconduct or while being the subject of a pending investigation involving serious misconduct, and that serious misconduct is going to be defined in those statewide professional standards of conduct that the board will develop, or for an act committed while in the performance of its duties that compromises an officer's credibility, integrity, honesty, or other characteristics constitute exculpatory or impeachment evidence, so what everyone keeps calling the Brady list. So if you have an officer whose conduct results in being terminated or resigns for that, that also has to be disclosed. All that will be reported by the employing agency over to DCJS to initiate the certification proceedings. Another thing that directly affects what the board does, especially the Committee on Training, is House Bill 5109 from Delegate Hope and Senate Bill 5030 again from Senator Locke. And DCJS will now develop uniform curriculum and lesson plans for the compulsory training standards used by the academies. So that's going to be a fairly significant change in what goes on here, where it's now you're going to be in the training academies will be all using the DCJS approved curriculum. Unless there is a provision that allows them to petition DCJS to approve the use of an alternative curriculum that substantially meets the standards of the uniform curriculum. So an academy is still capable of using their own curriculum. They just have to run it through us first to make sure it's going to meet the requirements of that uniform curriculum. And DCJS will annually evaluate each academy's compliance with the use of the uniform curriculum and lesson plans. In addition, Delegate Hope's 5109, Senator Locke's Senate Bill 5030, and we're going to add into the mix Senator Edwards' 5014, deal with new training standards, that new topics that will be incorporated into training standards, specifically sensitivity to and awareness of racism, the potential for racially biased policing, which shall include recognizing implicit biases in interacting with persons who have a mental illness, substance use disorder, or developmental or cognitive disability, de-escalation techniques, and lawful use of force. And then Senator Edwards' bill brings in that there are going to be these three modules of CIT training that will now be provided. So there's going to be the full-on CIT training for anyone who's actually on a CIT team, but there's going to be more basic steps, more elemental forms of CIT that are going to be offered at the academy and in addition to other training. So the next bill that will affect law enforcement in general is House Bill 5104 from Delegate Price, Senate Bill 5030 from Senator Locke again, which is now going to require information sharing among agencies dealing with prospective hires. So law enforcement agencies, prior to hiring an individual, has to reach out to any previously employing law enforcement or JR agency and ask them information about that in person. And those agencies must disclose information related to that officer's arrest or prosecution, which will include expunged information if known to the formerly employing agency. Any information related to a civil suit regarding the performance of an officer's duty, any information obtained during the course of any internal investigation, and any information related to an officer's job performance that led to the officer's dismissal, demotion, suspension, or transfer. So this is something where previously there was liability protection for agencies to disclose this information amongst themselves, but now it is now going to be a mandate. The liability protection continues on, so fulfilling the mandate is not going to expose anybody to any problems, but that is what's going on with those bills. In addition, right now there's House Bill 5104, which is Delegate Price, 5109 of Hope, and Senate Bill 5030 from Senator Locke, that are going to allow agencies to, when they hire somebody, to allow them to make the prospective employee undergo a psychological examination. At various points in time in the history of this bill, that was a mandate. It landed on it as only a discretionary obligation. So there are agencies out there now, I know, that do perform psychological examinations, some don't. So nothing's really going to change in that sense. However, DCGS is going to be tasked with developing guidelines and standards for the conduct of these psychological examinations. So that will be something that comes down the pike, which is you'll actually have those guidelines and standards coming out of DCGS for how these pre-employment psych exams should be conducted. Getting into more conduct issues, you have Senate Bill 5030 from Delegate Senator Locke and House Bill 5069 from Delegate Carol Foy that deal with the use of deadly force or in the use of neck restraints. Specifically, Delegate Carol Foy's bill only deals with neck restraints, which it prohibits the use of neck restraints unless it is necessary, immediately necessary to prevent death or serious bodily injury. In addition, that when you get into Senator Locke's bill, you also prohibit shooting at a moving motor vehicle, again, unless immediately necessary to protect a law enforcement officer or another person from death or serious bodily injury. And then Senator Locke's bill also prohibits the use of deadly force, again, subject to the unless immediately necessary to protect the officer or another person after serious bodily injury. And they add a few other things in there about how the officer should provide a warning that deadly force is going to be used if feasible, that the officer's actions are reasonable given the totality of the circumstances and all other options have been exhausted before using deadly force. I still don't know why they split off neck restraints and shooting at a moving motor vehicle, since both are also instances of deadly force from the other generic use of deadly force section, but that is what is in those bills. In addition, Senator Locke's 5030 and Delegate McQuinn's House Bill 5029 impose a duty on law enforcement officers to intervene when witnessing another officer engaging or attempting to engage in the use of excessive force and try to end the use of that excessive force when such intervention is objectively reasonable. And it also requires that that officer render aid, if possible, to any person injured as a result of the use of the excessive force, and requires that those officers report any intervention that they have to conduct or any use of excessive force witness to their superiors through whatever processes are at the employing agency about reporting such things. There's also protection from retaliation for making such reports. So an officer who makes such a report is protected from retaliation under the statute. Delegate Helmer has House Bill 5049 and Senator Locke has Senate Bill 5030, which is the prohibition on purchasing certain military equipment. So these bills prevent a law enforcement agency from purchasing weaponized unmanned aerial vehicles, aircraft that are configured for combat or are combat coded, grenades or similar explosives or grenade launchers, armored multi-wheeled vehicles that are mine resistant, ambush protected, and configured for combat, which apparently are called MRAPs, bayonets, firearms of 50 caliber or higher, ammunition of 50 caliber or higher, and weaponized tracked armored vehicles. There are two conditions on two of those, which is the grenades or grenade launchers. You can't get them from a federal surplus program, so you could get them otherwise, because I do know that for tear gas canisters, the device usually used to fire off the tear gas canister is a grenade launcher. You are would be able to get those and acquire those things. You just would not be able to acquire them through a federal surplus program. And the same is true with the armored multi-wheeled vehicle, which is, if those are available elsewhere, you're able to still acquire them. You just cannot acquire them through the federal surplus program. For agencies that have these things, so anything that's on that list, you're not allowed to have. If you have them currently, there's going to be a waiver process where you come to this board. We'll get the fun task of looking at anybody's waiver request to continue to use these items, and the board will then make a decision whether or not to grant waivers to continue the use of items that have been previously acquired by these agencies. In addition, for those two bills, so Delegate Helmer and Senator Locke's, they prohibit the use of kinetic impact munitions, so essentially rubber bullets, beanbags, unless necessary to protect the law enforcement officer or another person from bodily injury. The note between the difference between that as standard and the standard use for, when we're talking about chokehold, shooting at moving vehicles, deadly force, is bodily injury is a much lower standard than serious bodily injury if you go read the case law. So bodily injury, that's why that language is used there. So it's going to have more broader application when kinetic impact munitions would be able to be used under the terms of the legislation. The other thing that those bills require is that DCGS will develop a model policy for handling and use of tear gas or other gases and kinetic impact munitions that embody current best practices for using such items as a crowd control measure during an arrest or detention. At various points in time, the use of tear gas was curtailed in these bills, but at the end of the day, that was taken out, and what's left is the model policy being developed by DCJS about its use. Moving on to no-knock search warrants, we have Delegate Aird's House Bill 5099 and Senate Bill 5030 from Senator Locke again. Both bills prohibit no-knock search warrants. So in all cases, a law enforcement officer is going to have to provide an audible notice of his authority and purpose prior to the execution of a warrant. There are no exceptions under that. So that is what those bills do for no-knock warrants. In addition, they require, in general, that search warrants have to be executed in the daytime. At some points in time, they actually had specific time periods involved in them, but they've taken those out. So what it says is any search warrant has to be executed in daytime unless a judge or a magistrate, if a judge is not available, authorizes the execution of the search warrant at another time. So essentially, if you're going to want to execute a search warrant at a time at night, essentially, you're first going to have to go try and find a judge. And if not, then you're going to go to a magistrate and document why you were unable to find a judge and then get a search warrant. Now, if you can find a judge, the judge may just issue it. But that's the steps you'll have to go through to get a search warrant at night. Anything that is discovered in violation of these things, there is a statutory exclusionary rule. Moving on to civilian review panels, which is House Bill 5055 from Leader Herring and Senate Bill 5035 from Senator Hashmi. So where they ended up, because there was differences between the House and Senate positions. One was requiring civilian review panels in all localities. One was only making it a discretionary on behalf of the locality. They ended up on the discretionary side, so it allows a locality to establish a law enforcement civilian review panel that can investigate complaints, review internal investigations, make binding disciplinary determinations for the sheriffs who are watching. It does not apply to you. The civilian review panels are, sheriff's departments are accepted out of the bills, so we're only talking about police departments in these situations. In a locality that adopts a civilian review panel, that essentially takes them out of the protections under the Law Enforcement Officer Procedural Guarantee Act. So your grievance process and your disciplinary process will be different in jurisdictions that choose to go that way. There is a delayed effective date. This thing does not take effect till July 1, 2021, which not really much of a delayed effective date because bills passed in a special session take effect on the first day of the fourth month following adjournment. And since they're probably not likely to adjourn till November, that would be March anyway, but there's still a delayed effective date of July 1. Moving on, there is going to be the Marcus Alert System, House Bill 5043 and Senate Bill 5038, which at the end of the day, the Marcus Alert System is very, very complex. Essentially, it is a method of trying to make sure that the appropriate people respond to mental health crises calls as opposed to necessarily just a law enforcement response. And at times, it varied as to what model they were going to use. And at the end of the day, the conference board essentially decided to let the locals kind of guide their direction. So you can set up a community care team, which is a team that will involve a law enforcement officer as well as mental health professionals. Or you can go with mobile crisis, which is something that already exists that's run by Department of Behavioral Health and Developmental Services about how people respond to mental health calls. So it is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It is going to be guided to a certain extent by how the locals want to deal with these situations and what is best served by the resources they have available. There's a lot of reporting, training, protocols that need to be developed both on the local level and by DBHDS and DCJS. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that goes into standing up the Marcus Alert System. So the first real step is going to be by July 1, 2021, that there needs to be a plan developed by DCJS and Department of Behavioral Health to have a plan for the implementation of the Marcus Alert System. And then there's a phased in approach for how many Marcus Alert localities stand up every year. So that is going to be involved in long process. As it gets up and running. Moving on, there was House Bill 5058 from Delegate Hope and Senate Bill 5029 from Senator Lucas, which made a bunch of traffic infractions essentially secondary offenses. So preventing, no longer able to stop somebody for operating a motor vehicle without a light illuminating license plate, with defective equipment, without brake lights or behind mount stoplight, without an exhaust system that prevents excessive noise, window tinting with the dangling objects, or with an expired safety or inspection sticker until the first day of the fourth month after the expiration date. In addition, jaywalking is also something that can no longer stop somebody for, and also the other big thing, which so you have all these secondary offenses, is the odor of marijuana can no longer be the basis solely to stop or search somebody. And there's an exclusionary rule included in the bill for any stop made in violation of any of those provisions. House Bill 5098 from Delegate Askew, which makes it a class 6 felony to falsely summon a law enforcement official or give a false report to a law enforcement official because of a person's race, religious conviction, gender, disability, gender identity, sexual orientation, color, and national origin. So if you think of the New York Board Watcher case, that is exactly what this bill is aimed at. It's currently a class 1 misdemeanor just to make a generic false police report. So it's just making it a higher penalty if the person making the report did it based on a characteristic of the individual in that list. going on to Delegate Delaney's House Bill 5045 and got crammed into Senator Locke's bill at the end, Senate Bill 5030, which is something she's been trying for at least a couple of sessions, I know that, to make it a Class 6 felony for a law enforcement officer to currently know a person who's detained or arrested by the officer. So current law already covered probation officers, parole officers, you know, that whole gamut of people who have some degree of power over an individual to engage in criminal knowledge of those individuals. And this just adds in law enforcement officers to that list. Getting into stuff that we, you know, get less directly involved by the board, but still important to the law enforcement community. You have House Bill 5072 from Delegate Lopez and Senate Bill 5024 from Senator Lucas, which is going to authorize the Attorney General to do pattern and practice litigation. So essentially, the federal AG's office does this now, where they can go in and enter into conciliation agreements with any law enforcement agency where they think that the agency is engaging in a pattern and practice that deprives people of their rights. So a way to kind of go in and rectify situations. So think consent orders entered into by our AG's office and a police department in Virginia to correct certain practices. You have House Bill 5062 from Delegate Mullen and Senate Bill 5033 from Senator Servelle that require a court, if a Commonwealth attorney wants to dismiss a case, as long as the defendant agrees, the court has to dismiss it, absent bribery or bias or prejudice. So taking that and making it mandatory when the CA asks for dismissal. But the other big thing it does is it allows for deferral and dismissals for any crime now, which has been an ongoing bone of contention of the General Assembly for years and years about who has the authority to decide about deferrals and dismissals. So essentially, now that decision has been made, the General Assembly has given the authority to defer and dismiss for any case. You have Senate Bill 55007 from Senator Morrissey, which is his jury sentencing bill, which eliminates jury sentencing unless it is requested by the accused or in cases of capital murder. So now the judge will fix punishment in most cases unless he really wants the jury to do it. And in the case that the jury can't come to a decision, then the court ends up fixing punishment as opposed to current practice, which is if the jury can't come up with a punishment, they impanel a new jury. There is a delayed effective date on this one as well as of right now, which is July 1, 2021. So that's the jury sentencing bill. Moving on to more of the back end of what's going on, which is House Bill 5148 from Delegate Scott and Senate Bill 5034 from Senator Boysko, which is earned sentence credits. So there is going to be this new system of earned sentence credits for, it's a four-level classification system for persons who are in prison, so not jails, but in actual DOC custody prison, where there's going to be a maximum of 15 days that you can earn for each 30 days served, depending on what security level you are. There's a long list of crimes that are subject to only the current maximum sentence credit of 4.5 days, and it's just a giant list of offenses that if anyone's interested, we can call me and we can walk through them all. But I mean, that, you know, it's stuff like first degree, second degree murder thing, you know, it is those kind of levels of offenses. So this bill has a delayed effective date, so it doesn't take effect till January 1, 2022, but it also is retroactive when it does take effect, which means people who are currently in prison now will have their sentence calculation, their earned sentence credits calculated differently. So it may result in people being able to be released earlier than they would be under the current system because they would be entitled to more credits. So I do not envy DOC having to do math. Another thing that is in Senator Locke's bill that will affect law enforcement agencies and CA's offices is it allows the Commonwealth Attorney to get access to records of law enforcement officers relating to complaints of wrongful arrest, use of force, or depriving a person of their rights and privileges anytime that officer is a potential witness in a case. So essentially it's just making sure that the Commonwealth Attorney's Office will know whether or not there's any of this information floating around about there about an officer before it gets out, before that person takes the stand. But it is mandated, so if the CA asks for it, it has to be given. And that, I believe, is the last one, because the expungement bills don't seem to be moving forward. So that's all I got. Anybody have any questions?
Well, that's all.
It's been an eventful session.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cotter, for your report. A lot of stuff going on there. Time for public comment. I'll now turn the meeting over to Director Dion, if there are any public comments. If so, please state your full name, whether or not you're representing an organization or what that organization is, and please try and limit your comments to no more than 4 minutes. Ms. Dion?
Thank you. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak? And I think in the interest of time, maybe we should limit it to about a minute or two. Okay, hearing nothing from the Zoom meeting, it looks like there is no public comment.
All right, great. As it stands now, the next meeting will be December 10th, 2020 at 11 a.m. And it looks like we're headed toward another virtual meeting. Maybe we get into 2021, we'll be able to get back together in person. Any further business?
Mary Biggs, I have a question. Is there any way to get the summary of what was just presented by David so we could sort of keep up as it goes through the system with the governor and everything? I mean, look, I loved your summary of it. Is there any way to get like a copy of that?
I'm going to volunteer, Dave, to, yes, we can get you a copy of that, a summary of that. And we also did record the meeting as well, so if anyone wants to go back and listen to it, we can make that available to you. But we can certainly get some information to you, to everyone, if it helps.
Yeah. Thank you. It was so well done. I liked the order of it, and I liked, you know, his comments, and it would be interesting to follow through. Thank you.
Director Dion, I second that. Thanks for bringing that up, Ms. Biggs. And yes, he did a wonderful job with that. It was very informative, so I appreciate it. So I second what Ms. Biggs said. Thank you.
Great. Anybody got anything else? All right. Hearing no further business, we'll adjourn the meeting at 12:03. Everybody have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Stay healthy.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Awesome job, Lorraine. Thank you so much, Chief Williams.
Yeah, thanks, Lorraine.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Didn't mean to sneak that last roll call vote in on you, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I was ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was this last time, it was much more contentious than that, so.
Yeah. So, Lorraine, the email, Michael Hu Young emailed that he was trying to get into the meeting, and he did by email say he wanted to vote, but I don't think he can since he was not part of the meeting. So
I saw that. Okay. Yeah, it Zoom is challenging.
Yeah. Well, and it wouldn't, his one vote, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, I don't think. So it's all good. All right. Thank you all. Everybody have a good day.
Williams.
Yes.
Before you go, Russell Wilson yet again, right?
Oh, the man. 5-0.
I thought about it Monday night. I thought about you Monday night with the comeback, and I was like, that dang Chief again?
Yeah. Yeah, they're on borrowed time. Their defense can't stop a cold, though.
Well, good luck to you.
But he's good. Yeah, man, I hated seeing Dak Prescott go down. That was just awful.
Yeah.
That,
all right, sir.
Oh, and that hurt me watching it.
Yep. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right, you guys have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.